The Nature Journal is brought to you by SAPI in the interest of conserving our planet and enriching and empowering all South Africans.
When you chat to the folk at the ADU, you'll notice lately that there is a lot about butterflies. And some time ago, Prof. Les Underhill came to us and he asked whether or not we could assist with getting the paper for a butterfly atlas. No, this is not an atlas that turns around and says to you, look at butterflies in any form of shape, but it is an atlas that tells you where to find butterflies. In chatting to Les, it's become more and more apparent that there is a lot greater interest in butterflies than one would believe. Well, we're going to chat to Justin Bodie and find out more about his particular interest in butterflies and, in fact, how he started. And I guess the first thing that happens, Justin, is when we chat to you, we discover that there's an awful small world that we live in.
It is a very small world. We both know people from Port Alfred. Yeah, I got involved with butterfly photography. I've always had an interest in the natural world, but very limited as far as identification skills are concerned. With the advent of digital photography a number of years ago, I got my first digital camera and I started photographing birds. And that was quite exciting because I could start actually getting more of the species that I saw identified. My wife, who was still my fiance or girlfriend at the time, while she enjoyed the outdoors, she was starting to get a little bit bored of sitting in the car and watching me run around after these birds the whole time. She asked me to get a camera for her as she wanted to start photographing butterflies, which I duly did, and she really enjoyed it. And I started as well and thought, well, this is quite a bit of fun. And we decided that we're going to organize a trip down to the Barberton area to photograph butterflies. There are a number of butterflies there that are endemic to the area. With a number of emails with a local lepidopterist, we found that we were totally at the wrong time of the year for those specific butterflies. But he decided to take us out to a number of spots that he knew. One of them being an indigenous forest just outside Barberton, where we had an absolutely sensory overload as far as species and size and colors was. We were used to the bushveld butterflies that didn't really fly in big numbers. They were normal size, average size, and not that spectacular in color until we saw these forest butterflies, which are absolutely amazing. But what really got us started was while we were there, we photographed a little butterfly that if you mention the name in the society, grown men actually weep because they've looked for it for 50 years. And we happened to photograph it on our very first trip, organized butterfly trip. And since then, yeah, the bug has really bitten.
When you were out hunting this butterfly, were you actually hunting it? Or was it a case of, hang on, let's identify this. And by the way, what's that little thing in the corner?
No, it was totally random. We were photographing everything. We didn't know half the butterflies who we were photographing. Herbert Otto was with us. It was a local lepidopterist down in Barberton. He helped us with IDing quite a few of it. But he didn't even know this little orange butterfly that we were photographing. Well, when we got back to the car, we paged through the book and we saw that it's probably the scarce scarlet or the golden flash, as it's called, because it just flashes past you usually. And we saw in the field guide that it was rare and localized, but we didn't really think much of it. I mean, we were totally ignorant and we were advised to perhaps send a email to Steve Woodall, who wrote the field guide, just to get a confirmation of the butterfly. When I did send him the email, he replied to me with a single line saying, Justin, I hate you, advising me why he didn't like what I'd sent him, because it was only the second time this butterfly had ever been photographed in the wild.
Somewhat different when I'm listening to you, because normally a lepidopterist runs around the area. You always get that impression of a man in a white coat, possibly puffing on a pipe, and he has a large net and a jar of whatever jungle juice alongside, and a cork, a setting board. You're anything but that. You're armed with a camera.
We're lucky in that we became involved with the Butterfly Atlas project 4 or 5 years ago. And one of the best things that came out of the Butterfly Atlas was the virtual museum where citizen scientists could actually make a contribution. And we saw that we actually got great enjoyment out of photographing the butterflies. And the society has actually evolved since then. There are still the collectors and they have their place in the society. I mean, a number of the species you're never going to be able to identify from a photograph. You need to have them pinned to be able to identify them. But the society has evolved where previously it was only collectors. Now it's probably more photographers in the society than there are collectors.
What is the attraction, though, for photography and butterflies? Because I've got accused before when I do say that particularly your endangered butterflies invariably seem quite drab. It's almost like they're in hiding. But what is the attraction to the photography? Is it difficult?
It can be difficult. Some of the species are difficult to photograph. Probably the photo that I'm most proud of was a brilliant gem that I photographed on the Nabela Peninsula in KZN that I spent 2 hours trying to get a photograph of the butterfly. Because of its habit of emerging out of the middle of a thorn tree and then sitting on a branch 3 meters up in the air, you just struggle to photograph it, and it entailed me having to pull down a branch slowly and try and photograph it, and as soon as it gets to eye level, it flies off. The other thing is they're just incredibly beautiful. If you look at them on a computer screen once you've taken the photos, the detail of them, the coloration on them is just absolutely amazing. And as you get more involved with it, their life cycles just become so interesting, and there's just so much to learn about them. They let you learn a lot more about nature. I can probably identify 3 trees now compared to the 0 a couple of years ago. And that's just because they're food plants for butterflies.
You're looking at the world of nature now from 6 inches away.
Yes. You look at it through a macro lens, you see so much more detail. You're seeing ants, you're seeing small spiders, you're seeing lacewings. So yes, your interest in nature is actually expanding through the butterflies. One of the other things that we do now is with the moths. About a year ago, out of the 10,000 odd species of moths in South Africa, we knew what the larvae of about 150 of them looked like. But with one of our members now writing a book, he realized that he needs to have larvae in the book, but he didn't know what the larvae are. So he got the public involved with what they call the Great Caterpillar Moth Hunt Challenge, where members of the public breed a larva that they find and photograph it through the different stages. And the response to that has been absolutely phenomenal. I think that there's more than doubled our knowledge of larval stages of the moths in South Africa.
What sounds particularly interesting here is that this is not a destructive form of study.
With the photography side of things, not at all. It's more of a way of learning more about the natural life out there, about the butterflies and moths, and photographing them. So it's going to appeal to more of your bunny hugger type of people who don't want to actually kill something.
Is there a great requirement still, though, for people to become involved in butterflies, in the Lepidoptera Society, and in particular, naturalists?
Most definitely. We've got a membership throughout the world of about 400 members, but many of those are institutions like libraries and museums. In South Africa, you've probably got maybe 50 or 60 active individuals, and South Africa is a big country. I mean, you look at the recent discoveries of new localities for our critically endangered species. Those 50 or 60 people can't search the whole of the country looking for new localities and being responsible for actually conserving those areas where the critically endangered butterflies do occur.
Is this then a case of, hang on a minute, guys, we are missing butterflies that haven't been seen for years and years? Are they in fact extinct, or maybe we just don't look in the right areas, and through opening this to the public, we get better access to areas?
A bit of both. Some of them, I think they are gone. We're never going to see them again. But others, I mean, if you look in the last 3 years or so, out of the 14 critically endangered butterflies in South Africa, we found new localities for 6 of them. A lot of them have been found by the society, but the recent one for the Cadestes barbara abunta, the False Bay Ranger, the new locality was discovered by someone working for the Cape Town Nature. The Volkberg Zulu, which we thought was on the brink of extinction because it's only known localities in a tiny area surrounded by plantations, that was found by a local botanist in the Volkberg area in January, the new locality. She was out looking for flowers to photograph for a book she was writing, and known what the butterfly looks like, and she happened to photograph it and sent it to one of our members, who was rather excited when he found out where she had photographed it.
Obviously, this means that there is great opportunity for people to find more and more. I guess the first question, though, is, hang on, guys, I don't have a great camera. I've got a point and shoot. Maybe I've only got an iPhone or a little BlackBerry or some form of smartphone, etc. Can I start with that?
Most definitely. Your entry-level point-and-shoots, they've got great macro functions. The point-and-shoot cameras, that is one level where they can almost compete with a 50,000-60,000 rand SLR rig because of the macro function. You still need to get close to the butterfly to photograph it. I started that way because it's what camera I had at the time. Yes, you do evolve and get better equipment as you go along, but for the general public just interested in photographing butterflies, cell phone cameras, they've advanced so much in the last few years, that's quite sufficient, or a normal point and shoot.
As you say, that's where you started, which always says to me, it's not where you are now. What sort of rig does one really need to enjoy the butterfly photography? The detail and also the ability of getting close, getting the right sort of light onto the butterfly.
Your big problem is light. You want a good depth of field and a good shutter speed, and the two don't combine well if you don't have good light. The majority of the serious photographers have an SLR with a macro lens, but then with a other ring flash or a twin-head flash that's connected to the camera. That's not a must. I mean, a normal on-camera flash will work as well. But when you're getting into the real detail of things, you're going to have to get a bit more advanced equipment. Some of our members then photograph eggs, and that is a science unto its own. You need very specialist lenses, almost microscope lenses. I've seen the guys take the photos with them, and it is a frustrating lens to learn how to use. And not only that, the way that you need to then process it after it, because they use a technique called focus stacking, where you take a whole bunch of photos of the egg at different focal lengths, and you've got a program that then combines it together with the part that is in focus from each photo and combines it into one, so you get the whole egg into focus. Now, when you're considering that you've got a pinhead size egg, that takes some patience and doing.
The type of photography obviously is incredible, but I would imagine you are able to spend a lot of time in nature and you're able to get an appreciation of things around you because you haven't always got butterflies at your beck and call.
Most definitely. I've recently started photographing lacewings for Mervyn Mansell. He's the lacewing expert in South Africa. As you said, you're looking at the world from 6 inches. So you're looking at smaller things. You're looking at beetles, spiders. And what is so fun is that with the ADU's virtual museums, they've got so many virtual museums now, almost everything that you photograph, you can actually be submitting to the virtual museum where it is actually going to be used for a scientific purpose.
The interaction with other organizations, though, because what we found the other day is we had a meeting and we were talking about one of the trees we're looking for. And the comment was, hang on a minute, why don't we involve the butterfly folk? It could be a food source, and equally we don't know whether it's a food source. That surely must open you to other forms of research as well.
Most definitely. I look at a number of members of the society, their plant knowledge is phenomenal. You look at the interaction of butterflies and ants. We in conversation with one of the ant experts in South Africa, because there's just not that many people in South Africa looking for ants. But because we're out in the field and because butterflies do have a relationship with ants, we in constant contact with them, we now helping him with his research, collecting ants for him so that he can actually look at the distribution of ants and also look at the species that are out there. I mean, there are many undescribed species of ants out there.
I would imagine at the same token, there must be a fair number of undescribed butterfly species.
Every year, there are a few more that are described. People go out and looking for butterflies and they find a new locality for something that they think they know what it is, and then they realize, no, this is new to science. You look at the size of this country, and the nature of and habit of butterflies is that from one hilltop to another hilltop, you'll get two of the same genus of butterflies there, but they're two different species on those two hilltops. And access to a lot of these places is a big problem. I was driving through the Steelport area the other day, and you look at those hills and mountains up there, and what could be up there, but how do you get up there? That's the big problem.
Yeah, and again, I would imagine this requires a lot of walking as well, which gets you just that little bit closer. Birders, for example, always happy to tell you, I've just seen my 75th bird, I've got a life list, etc. I'm looking for. Same sort of idea in butterflies. Do you guys also tick off the numbers that you've seen? Do you have targets that you want to see, specialists, ones that you would drive 1,000 kilometers to find?
Yeah, I've only driven 1,000 kilometers once to go and look for a butterfly, and that was the Walkburg Zulu earlier the year, because it was quite a momentous occasion. But yes, we do have our lists. I don't think we are serious as the birders. I'm just as happy photographing a common African monarch as I am a waterbird copper, which until a few months ago was thought to be extinct. So yes, we do arrange for trips out into the field to go and look for specific things. I've become the unofficial half-elf butterfly and moth club trip organizer, and how that works is basically my wife Yolandi and I will say, well, what butterflies do we want to go and look for and in what area, and then we invite other members to join us, members that will obviously know a little bit more than us and can give us guidance what time of the year would be the right time to go there.
One of the things that you hear here is a incredible involvement and an incredible passion for what the folk are doing. And I think listening to Justin, you can also understand that it's around photography. It's taking a passion and it's expanding it. It's not only just going out and taking the photograph of the butterfly. I'm pretty sure soon you'll be taking photographs of small flowers. Some of those incredible flowers that you get in the Kalahari, for example, where the flower is about the size of a pinhead. And there is just so much more appreciation once you go beyond the big five. Big five, scary hairies as they can be called. Here you've got butterflies. You can walk to them. You can look for the trees. You can get an appreciation of exactly what's happening. Butterflies are also incredible indicators of the landscape, of the health of habitat, and of course an important part of our biodiversity. We always talk about bees as the example, as pollinators of different items. Butterflies form exactly the same process, and we just don't know enough about these little guys. And I think the beauty here is you have a society that wants to involve citizen science. After all, as Justin said, a lot of the society is made up of citizen scientists. And I think that's tremendously important to know. Equally, what I really liked is Justin's got a lovely rig. He's got a beautiful Canon camera with the appropriate lens, a ring flash and everything else. But he started out on a point and shoot. Yes, you can buy yourself one of the nice new bridge cameras, but it's not the only camera that does the job. Even your modern cell phones, for example, some of them take really great photographs. Maybe it's something that gets you into it and you can then expand. Justin, if people want to find out more about this, they want to become involved, want to become photographic collectors with you guys, maybe find out more about the trips, how do they do that?
Well, the best would be our website, www.lepsoc.org.za. There's contact details for the various branch chairmen and council members. There's also a forum there where you'll see trip reports. We've also got a Facebook page, Lepsoc Africa. People can follow us there and we keep it updated with interesting news and snippets.
Here we go. It's www.lepsoc.org.za. And Justin also did say about the ADU, where you've got all of the different virtual museums. And that's the beauty, is that the photographs that you take, don't worry about the fact that that photograph might be a repeat of something that's been done 300 times or 1,000 times before you. That photograph is as important as the photograph of something that hasn't been seen for a long, long time. And again, it just means that you and I are able to participate in science and in science collecting for the future. This is a non-destructive way as well, utilizing your camera to go and record the location of butterflies. Justin, great. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tim.
There we go. And that's Justin Bodie. And Justin, of course, is involved with the Lepidoptera Society. He is a member of their executive, and always great to get people that are passionate about what they're doing. And of course, don't forget that website again, www.lepsoc, that's L-E-P-S-O-C, .org.za.
The Nature Journal is an initiative in support of the sustainability of our planet, its people, and prosperity. Brought to you by Sappi, global paper, packaging, and cellulose company. Sappi, inspired by life.